Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. Wherever you are in the world, welcome to the Defining Time Show on Fifth Wrist Radio, and thank you for tuning in. Fifth Wrist was set up by enthusiasts to serve the community by giving community members the opportunity to review their own watches. So this way you can have an honest about what you like about it and what's it like to live with, and tell people the pros and cons about the watch. So if you haven't already, check out the website and review one of your watches and help another community member make the right decision about their next purchase. So my name's Anthony. Today I'm joined by my co-host Vinny from Tell Your Time. Welcome, Vinny.
What a welcome. What an intro. Amazing. Loving the change up. Brilliantly executed, yes. Mate. Very well done.
Thank you. Today is a podcast that I've been wanting to do for a while, actually, and we've got a very special guest on the show. Today we're going to talk to a fellow enthusiast about, you know, photography styles, but also a lot about watches. And then inspired by this gentleman's Instagram profile, we're going to battle, and we're going to battle for the toughest watches on the planet. So under 1K, 5K, 10K, three watches each. Which is going to win? I don't know. Probably mine, but we'll see. Well, there you go. He's jumped in. So welcome, Don Rogan, all the way from Canada. How are you?
Very well, gentlemen. Honored to be on the podcast. Absolutely been a listener for some time now, and really happy to be here.
So glad to have you on.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been following Don since about December 2018, I think it was, and always been quite captivated by the photography style that he has, the caliber of watches in his collection. So it's a real privilege to get you on today and have a chat. So for those playing along at home, don.rogan, I think, is that right for your Instagram?
Yeah, I think so.
Don Rogan. Don Rogan on Instagram. So have a look. You'll be pleasantly not surprised, but you'll enjoy looking over the profile. So, all right, well, let's get into it, and we'll do some wrist checks and drink checks. So it is 9 o'clock in the morning here in Australia, and I did stuff up my GMT times because I wasn't wearing my GMT. So sorry about that, Don, but never mind. I'll go first, and then we'll go to Don, and then we'll go to Vinny. So I am wearing... Given that we're talking about tough watches, I thought I would put my correctly sized Explorer on, the 36mm, because it is a watch that is pretty tough. It can do everything, well, not everything. It's got no complications other than telling the time. But at the same time, it's it is a tough watch. It's got a really cool history, and I thought that would be fitting for today's show. And I'm drinking a coffee, black coffee. My wife recently bought me one of those dripper coffees. So I'm testing it out and trying to find the right, the right amount of coffee for water and stuff. So it's very exciting stuff here in Adelaide, Australia this morning. Now, Don, what is on your wrist and what are you drinking? What manly drink are you drinking?
So I'm wearing the Tudor P01, which is actually my latest edition. I got that about 6 weeks ago. And I must say it has rarely left my wrist in the time since I purchased it. It's almost become my daily beater during that time. And for drinks, I'm drinking a local brewery called Endeavor. It's I live sort of slightly outside Edmonton, Alberta, in a small town. And I'm drinking their Tumbling Goat Belgian Pale Ale. So a shout out to the local brewmaster.
Nice.
What a name.
I know, that's a long
that's
one.
Brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant.
Tumbling Goat.
And the P01, so maybe we'll pause on that and we'll talk about it when we get into your collection, because sure. I'm very, very interested. I've not spoken to someone who's owned one, and it's going to be cool to get your views on it. Vinny, what is on your wrist and what are you drinking?
Alrighty, so I've got the G-Shock DW5500BB on the wrist. I know for this challenge that we decided to rule out G-Shocks, but this watch has got a bit of a cult following. Shout out to John Crowley, who is also on Fifth Wrist. He's got one, and at Horology Cafe. We all got matching watches, so yeah, I thought I'd pop that one on, because you couldn't break this thing if you tried. And this 55 series has the coolest rectangular case, that's slightly different to like the G-Shocks that you usually think of.
But could you throw it across the room like Tim Mosso did with his JLC?
I have, and you can. Yep.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you could drop that thing from a building and it wouldn't break.
I think it enjoys being thrown around. It's takes it like a champ. It's such a good watch, and like it's a big one, but it just fits the wrist so well, short lug to lug, and yeah, easily my favorite G-Shock. Wish they came out in more colors.
Awesome. And drinks? Scotch?
Well, it's 9:30 odd in the morning, and I've got a gin. Nah, I'm kidding. It's just a coffee for me. Nothing too scientific like you've got going on, Anth. But yeah, super excited for today. And I cannot wait to talk about this P01 because yes. I may have raised my eyebrow. So far, it might have popped off my forehead when it came out. So I cannot wait to talk to Don about it because like it's such an out there watch. And I want to get to know what the purchasing decision was.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into that and let's have a chat to Don now. So I think let's just go back to sort of where it all started and tell us a little about your journey into watches.
You know, when you asked me about this at first, you know, I'm not a very introspective person. So I think for me, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, obviously in the pre-cell phone era, with some pretty straight-laced parents. So, you know, being home on time or being here at a certain time was very important in our household. And, you know, I think just given what was going on in terms of technology at that time, the watch was really your only answer. So I went through probably during that time, a dozen Timex Ironmans. That was my watch of choice from probably about 8 years old until about 16. I just go to the store and pick up a new one. When I got into high school, of course, fashion is a little bit, you know, more of a focus. And without the internet and the intimidation of an AD at the time, you know, we were really restricted to department store showcases. And so I went through a whole bunch of fashion watches during that time, Guess and those type of things, some Diesels as well. But a girlfriend of mine had a Tag F1. And that was kind of like my introduction into like, you know, watches other than that were just kind of readily available over the counter. And so when I, you know, started my career and went out on my own and got my first managerial job, I actually bought myself a Tag F1, not knowing anything about the Swiss watch industry, just, you know, knowing it as a cool watch. It was a Swiss watch and it was kind of like the next step up. It was quartz, of course, but it was just sort of, I bought it as sort of a reward to myself for a career milestone. The next watch I got was my grandmother passed away and left me some money. So I ended up getting a Tag Monaco just because that was the only brand I knew. And I wore that literally nonstop for, 4 years. The strap fell apart during that time. And it was on its original leather strap. And if I wasn't wearing it, you could open the front door of the house and you could smell that strap. It was it was disgusting. But I kind of got on with the internet growing, and I think around 2010 really started the kickoff for watches on the internet, at least for me anyway. And I followed the Watch You Want channel, and it really in the very early days of it with Tim and OJ, and I can remember being on like live streams and there were like 8 of us or 16 of us, and that just kind of really opened my world to, you know, everything else that was out there. They were coming on with, you know, watches that would blow your mind from a guy that was wearing a Monaco at the time. And so it's kind of been from that point on, it's really been a bit of a passion of mine is watches. So
that's awesome. That's it's interesting you say about the smelly Tag Heuer bracelets, because I've still got one. I've put it in a bag and I refuse to throw it out because the replacement was $945. And I'm thinking this is just ridiculous, but they do stink after a while. But that's a really cool really cool introduction into watches. Like, it's obviously something that has sort of been with you for such a long time.
Well, I think with a lot of these things, right, sometimes the foundation is there and you're just not conscious of it until, you know, further down or later on in your life, you know, you're able to make that connection. And I think that's what happened to me with watches anyway.
Yeah. And you still got the Monaco?
No, I sold the Monaco.
Hold it.
Monaco went with a big watch purge back in 2014. So the Monaco lives on in another watch, but I don't know. I have my regrets from time to time, but you know, I wasn't as emotionally attached to it as I am some current pieces that I have.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Awesome. So if we think about the, your current collection, I mean, let's just dive straight into the, you like what I did there? Dive straight into the Pro Cloth.
Yeah.
That was for Roman. Thank you, Roman. So let's have a chat about that because, and then we'll go backwards a little bit, but, you know, what was it about it? What was the thought process? How did that end up in your collection? Then I'll let Vinny ask all the questions from here about it.
So I guess when I look at watches, I'm drawn to pieces that aren't as common as other people have. So if you think about like a steel sports watch diver, you know, obviously subs come to mind, the Omega 300, those type of things. And I just want, you know, something different, but still has, I guess, that same history and that same credibility behind it. And the Pro Cloth was just such an iconic design that it was tough not to sort of, I guess, choose that as an alternative to something that some other people have. And I really originally was going to buy a brand new one. Black Dial Orange Hands was probably my preference, or the gray titanium dial with the orange hands. But I just was on Chrono 24, and for about the same price as you could get the new ones, I ended up getting the Sedna Gold Edition for the same price. So that's really how I ended up with that watch. But to me, it's a bit of a statement piece that I like. You know, it still has all that diver cred, but it's not one that you see out there very often. So the other thing I don't really like is the date windows. So I struggled with getting the older model because of the date window placement.
Has your Pro Cloth, has that got a date?
No, it's the new Thai version.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I tried one on and it's a big brash watch, but it's not overpowering, and it's definitely something you can wear if you're into that style, and I certainly like it. I think it's really cool. And the P01, if we go back to that, so what was your decisions behind getting that watch?
Again, just something a little offbeat. I wanted a Swiss watch that wasn't super high end but wasn't super low end either. That was, and I like the idea that they got good movement with the in-house Tudor 70-hour power reserve. And it was just sort of like a quirky thing. And it's one of those watches that you can take off your wrist and look at it at a bunch of different angles. And it just kind of surprises you how nice it is or how curious it is to look at from all those angles. And, you know, I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, subs get a lot of love, and you know, the Omega 300 Seamaster gets a lot of love, but I just kind of find this one with its lugs, with the crown placement, the crazy bezel thing, you know, it just has a lot of interesting aspects to it versus just a rotating bezel.
Yeah, it's a one hell of a surprising watch. Like, I remember when I first saw the release and I thought, what have they done here? And I probably couldn't understand why Tudor would come out with a watch like the P01. And I think a lot of people at face value just thought, this is ridiculous. Probably mixed in with a bit of disappointment from not getting a new Tudor sub, because all the teasing was looking at the, you know, triangle markers that everyone just jumped straight to, yes, new Tudor sub. But then I remember seeing it for the first time, and it's a big watch, but you just got to put your hands up and say, look, I'm so glad that Tudor has gone and done something wild, wacky, even if it's not for me. It's just like oozing with, I think you are the perfect wearer for this watch, because I was thinking, who buys this watch? I wasn't quite sure because it wasn't for me, But then I look through your Instagram profile and see you've got a Plo Prof, you've got, you know, a Panerai, you've got all these big chunky watches that just say, like, I like what I like and I'm going to wear it. And that's exactly what the P01 is, I think. So I remember when you got it, I thought that is such a you watch. yeah, it's just so divisive, but you got to, like, if you like watches, you just got to appreciate it and say, no, shout out to Michael. You just have to appreciate that Tudor have done it. So yeah, it's such an interesting piece.
Yeah, it is. I'm really hoping they discontinue it. That's my next goal.
Yeah, well,
because it's so hated, right? So
yeah, like it'll come around. I think, yeah, a lot of pieces don't go through full circle, don't they? Yeah, and I remember trying on the Plo Prof as well, Anthony, and thinking, this is bloody cool, but I wonder who buys this. And it's just like, it's like such a statement, but it's so cool. And I remember all of us were like egging each other on when we were, I think we were at an Omega boutique. We're all egging each other on, like, come on, guys, who's going to buy this thing? It's so cool. But we're all like, ah, we can't wear it. But yeah, I mean, it's just such a baller watch.
See, I'm not a huge Omega guy, but I could see myself with one of these in my collection in the future. And I don't say that too often, especially about Omega watches, and in particular, non sort of independent watches now, because that's sort of where I'm going. But this one, I don't know. There's just something about it that's super cool. Awesome. Really cool. I think, what about the Panerai 1950? How long have you had that for?
Oh, probably about 3 years. So the 1950 is easily the biggest watch I own.
Is it 47?
Yeah, it wears a lot larger than the Plo Prof. If you were to see them side by side, it dwarfs the Plo Prof.
Yeah, right.
And I got it because, you know, in the early days of Watch You Want, obviously the company was owned by O.J. Watley, which I think was, at least here in North America, was a sort of a bit of a driving force to get out the, you know, the Panerai name, or he was one of the first Paneristi here. And so there was a bit of a bent from that channel on Panerai. So I did go through a Panerai phase, and I did want a radio mirror. I did want a luminaire, and I did want a submersible. So the 1950 was just sort of the obvious choice during that time. I did think about getting a 372, but the 1950 came up, and it was just, you had to get the 127. It's the iconic diver. So that's just what I ended up with.
Yeah, I love the crystal on it. I think it's crystal, but just the distortion of the 36912 just in every picture just looks awesome.
Yeah, it is a very cool watch.
Yeah, I'm coming around on Panerai in a very big way. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I saw, I just love, like, the really, I think it's the luminal with the crown guards, and it's like, all you get is the numerals at 12, 3, 6, and 9, no running seconds. Yeah. And it's just like this basic, like, super Panerai watch. And I can get into that. I don't know. I haven't tried one on to see if it fits, but, like, it's just, yeah, it's just cool. I've come around on them. So I'm not sure if I want to make it into the collection, but I'm loving it.
I love the California dial, the 424 that you've got as well. Sorry, go back, Dom.
No, and they fit a lot like the Pro Prof. I mean, if you've had the Plo Prof on, yeah, they're big watches, but they're big watches, you know, in bezel size. They're not big watches in from lug to lug. So they wear very small. Like the 424 that I have is, I would say, I mean, they say it's a 47 millimeter watch, but, you know, I would say that wears like a 43 or 44. It's really very, very wearable.
Yeah. And the California dial 424, that's, I'm not a fan of those. What are the lugs called? These ones?
The wire lugs.
Wire lugs. Yeah. Can someone tell me, I'm going to be really naive here, but can someone tell me how you change a strap on these watches? Do you just pull them out, or how does it work? Cause I can't see it and I've never understood it.
Okay, so not easy is the first answer. I mean, from a company that prides themselves on strap changing, right? So basically how it works is there's two, I'm going to say, like, L brackets that go into, and as you pull them out, you've got to coordinate both sides of those inside the strap, and then they plug back in like on a certain angle while having to screw in like these super tiny screws to tighten them up. So half the time, if you have like a really thick strap near the, that's got a, like it's thick near the lugs, you've really got to kind of, you need a third hand really to do it. So I don't change the strap on that too often, to be honest with you. I found a strap I like and it just kind of stays on there.
Yeah, because I've always been intrigued about it, and I've never really sort of taken the time to learn. But you know, that would make sense, that it does look difficult to do, because Moser have got one on their historic collection with those beautiful numerals, and I never understood it. But I love that watch. I think that 424 is awesome. I love California dials just because they're so quirky and just different.
I think, you know, I don't want to be, you know, over stereotype things, but, you know, they're Italian design watches. And I think, you know, I think a lot of things that come out of Italy in terms of design work really well. And so I'm not surprised that, you know, these designs have endured, you know, over time. I mean, it's like Ferrari, right? I mean, Ferrari hasn't won a race or hasn't won a championship in 8 years, but, you know, people are still crazy about Ferrari.
Yeah, definitely. It's true. And we know Panerai's got just such a huge following. So on your Instagram, which watch is the one you've had probably the longest? What do you think?
Probably my current collection, probably my Seiko Turtle.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I went on Instagram May of 2018, and I just leave that original shot up there just sort of as a date marker. So
yeah.
And I guess I shouldn't say that. That's my oldest Instagram pic. But of all my watches, the oldest one I have is probably my UN Diver, the Max Marine Diver. So,
do your watches, like, on the scale of I don't sell to I flip whenever I like, where do you find like your collecting? Are you someone who's happy to let things come in and out quite often, or is there what's your thoughts there? Because I'm very much the buy and hold, and don't really think, I hate selling watches, which probably will lead to some trouble later on down the line. But just wondering how long watches really stay in your collection.
So I used to be a big flipper when I started out, kind of my interest in watches. And I think that's just because I didn't know a lot about watches. So watches that I would see, I'd be like, oh my God. You'd order it, and sometimes by the time it arrived at your door, you're kind of like over that obsession with it. And so I ended up flipping a lot. Like, I had a Breitling Chronomat at the time, I had a Girard Perregaux. I'd been through a couple Bell and Rosses. I think what I was doing at that time was I was trying to define my direction for collecting. And what I decided is I would just collect watches that I'd like. So, you know, I had a couple Bell and Rosses at the time. I thought, man, I should just become a, you know, Tim Mosso is a JLC lover. Why don't I become a Bell and Ross lover? But I found with the different brands, and this is, you know, what Anthony said about Omega, is like, I like a couple watches here and there. I don't have to love the whole brand. I can appreciate that single piece for what it is. And that's kind of my philosophy right now. Like, I like Omega. I don't like everything that Omega does. I wouldn't, you know, there's Omega watches I wouldn't buy that I really like just because everybody has them. But I don't limit myself based on, you know, a brand or anything like that. So what I'm doing now is I'm not flipping. I'm just buying and holding. And I've limited myself to 12. I'm not going to buy any more than 12. So if I get another watch, one has to go. That's kind of like my rule. So I realized the other day that I actually had 13 here. So I had a Seiko Recraft, and it was my buddy's birthday. So I shot him a picture of the watch, said, you know, would you want this watch? Would you wear this watch? He said, sure. And so I just packed it up in the mail and sent it off to him just to get back down to 12. So,
oh, nice.
But you know, when you look at the collection, it comes to a point, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way, is there's the amount of watches that you might have that are considered like untouchables in your collection continues to grow. And, you know, if I've limited to 12, I really have to start making some tough decisions about what stays and what goes. And a lot of these watches I've become a little bit emotionally attached to. And so that would be a harder decision today than it would have been like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's a great collecting philosophy. I think you go through like, oh, I should just collect from one brand. And then you realize, yeah, maybe I just, yeah, just buy what you love, hold what you do. And if there's something you don't wear and you've been neglecting, then yeah, chuck it to a mate. Why not? Or just, yeah, let it go. So yeah, I think that's also where I've gone as well. See a lot of parallels in my collecting thoughts, as with you, Don.
Cool. Before we get to photography, I did want to ask, what's your community like surrounding you? Have you got a few people or buddies that are kind of interested in it, or is that, or do you need to travel to sort of find that community?
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons that I'm on Instagram, is it just doesn't exist here at all.
Yeah. Okay.
We have, you know, Edmonton, which is the closest city here, is a town of about 1 million people. One single AD pretty much has all the watch brands.
Okay.
And everyone else fights over Citizens, Boulevard, you know what I mean? Those type of stuff. Right. And so you only go to one place. And then the other thing I find here too, is a lot of my friends aren't really into watches. I mean, the price of some of these things is kind of ridiculous anyway. So, you know, raising a family and whatever, there's some other concerns around that too. You know, I consider myself very fortunate, but, you know, it's tough to justify, to be quite honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And thinking into the future, so you're at 12 watches now. No doubt this will not be your collection for the rest of your life. Some things are going to change and you probably have some in, some out. But from your perspective, what's probably the biggest non-negotiable that you have to think about when you're purchasing, you know, when you're thinking about what the next watch might be? What's just one thing that just has to be there?
I would say a balanced dial, if I was okay to say. I've got more a list of pet peeves than I do anything else. I mean, I tend to graduate to dive watches just because I think they're a cleaner dial. It's easier for them to balance. You know, I mentioned about the Proplof not wanting the 224 or the stainless steel version. I ended up with the 227 version just simply because of the lack of date window on it. It bothered me that there was a date window at 4:30. I don't like date windows at 4:30. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it really does bother me. The other thing I don't like too is, you know, I don't have a chronograph in the collection currently. I'd like to get one, but I find when they design chronographs, it's kind of like they're on like AutoCAD or something. So they place like, you know, 1 to 12 on, and then they slap on the chronograph dials. And then they're not afraid to cut off the numbers, which I think is kind of ridiculous too. You know, like 6 looks like an upside down C because you got a big second counter there. You know, like
totally agree.
If anyone's going to spend, you know, $8,000 on a watch, like I know where the number 6 is. Like I'm into it enough to know, you know, what's going on with that. So a lot of that type of crap really does bother me. So, and I think, you know, brands like Daniel Wellington or whatever, you know, they get a lot of grief, but there's a reason people like them. I mean, they are fashion brands, but there's a reason, like it's a nice balanced dial. It's a clean looking dial. Like I appreciate it's lacks zero credibility in the community, but I kind of find sometimes these Swiss brands just slap like, you know, one level onto another, and then we got to find a place for the date, and then we got this huge logo. It's got to find a place, and then oops, however many 100 meters of water resistance, we got to put that on the dial. And by the time you get there, it just kind of looks like a quilt. It's like patched together.
Yeah, I agree. That pet peeves. I think you outlined a great one there, where they cut off the numerals, or the one that gets me the most is the half loo marker. So like you've got all the loom markers, and then you've got squeezed in the date, and then you've squeezed in like a tiny little loom pip thing. And it's like, it's neither a complete date window and it's neither a complete loom index. And it just, kills me.
See, Don, that's why it's time for you to go to Habring, because I've just sent you a picture of a beautiful mono pusher that doesn't cut off any numerals, and you'll be able to read it correctly. So anyway.
But if you look at like the FP Jorns, for instance, like he's not afraid to reduce the size of the numerals, right? I think in the areas like 4 or whatever, where it's not impacted by a subdial, it's a regular size, but it does still look balanced, and he's not afraid to reduce the size of that. So,
yeah, no, I agree. I think that's a really cool sort of, I mean, it's challenging though, because a lot of watch brands just do that kind of stuff. But that'll keep it exciting while you're hunting for the next piece.
And sometimes it works. I mean, if you look at the Navitimer, for instance, that's probably the busiest dial out there, but yeah, for whatever reason, that for me anyway, that just works.
Yeah. So we talk a little bit about your photography and your Instagram profile. I mean, you don't need to know too much about anything at all to have a look at your profile and just go, yeah, that's pretty cool. So what was the sort of inspiration and motivation behind this unique style that you have?
Oh, I don't really know the answer to that. I think it's a lot of, you know, you are who you are and you photograph what you like, and you have a certain style, and that's what it is. I really like rustic images. I like the idea of sort of vintage looking images. I wanted to do something different when I first started, and basically the reason I got on Instagram, because there was no watch community here, so to go out and talk about watches or be around watches or do something watch related, Instagram offered a great outlet for that. And when I got on Instagram at the time, it seemed to me, especially with like wrist shots and whatnot, that there were a lot of watches that, you know, the watch was being viewed as how we look at it when we look at what time it is. But for me, I stare at watches from all different angles all the time to find out, you know, what's cool about the piece I just bought. And I didn't find that there were a lot of pictures that looked at, you know, that's the way my watch looks at the nightstand when I took it off at, you know, 1 a.m. in the morning and just left it there. And that's a really cool angle. So, and also there is other aspects of the watch too. Like I really like straps. And so, you know, why not include those in a lot of the photographs as well? So,
yeah.
And I just
think you've answered that.
Sorry, yeah, and I just wanted to do something a little bit different from everybody else. So, but as to my style, I don't think it's a conscious choice. I just think it's like who you are. And, you know, I've tried to take those like really clean photographs that people take. And I even went out and bought a camera this spring. I got like a good Fuji camera. I thought, well, you know, I'll start to clean up the fuzziness and the rustic approach and really have like nice clean shots. And I just couldn't do it. I just, as much as I tried to produce that type of work, it just would not come out for me. So,
yeah.
Got to do your own thing for sure.
Absolutely. I think you answered that really well. I think, you know, you can see it from your Instagram style. I love the fact that the straps for you, they're quite prominent in a lot of your pictures. And we really just, we don't see that too often unless, you know, unless it is a strap company or something like that.
Strap is an easy one to, you know, slide one by the wife, right? So you still want to buy watches, but you can't have a new watch show up at the front door all the time, right? Because,
yep.
Right. So, you know, what's in the envelope there? Yeah, I don't know. Just some bill. Is that a new strap? No, it's been around for a while. You haven't seen that one?
The other one stinks. Trust me, I'm doing you a favor.
Yeah, that's a right. One. I burnt the other one.
Man, that is awesome. All right, cool. I think, look, thank you so much, Donna. It was really, really great to sort of get to know you a little bit better and talk about your collecting philosophy, a bit about your photography and your collection, which is awesome. But the time has come, gentlemen. It is. I need some sort of really crazy background music here. For the battle. So maybe I can get some Braveheart, something. I'll find something for next time. We are going to go to battle now. And you know, this as we know, and as a lot of people know, these are so much fun to do. And they encourage you to get outside your comfort zone and look at things that you wouldn't normally look at. So we're going to go into battle now. So the prerequisites for this were we wanted to find the toughest watches on the planet at different price categories. So 1,000 Aussie, 5K, and then 10K Aussie. The only real rule, there were two rules. One was that if you wanted to pick a watch that's already in your own collection, which is certainly okay, but you can only do one. So the other two need to be something that you don't have. And G-Shock was not included. And the reason I did that was because G-Shock is a bit like Rolex in some ways, that they're their own beast. Like nothing is tougher than G-Shocks. They are the boss. So without having to get 9 different G-Shocks to be picked, I thought we would go down this road and have a bit of a challenge. So who wants to kick us off? Maybe we'll start with Vinny for the 1K. And then maybe Don can start the 5K and then I'll start the 10K.
Sounds good.
Let's go, Vinny. $1,000 Aussie. What is your toughest watch on the planet?
Alrighty. So I don't think there's going to be many surprises here that I've gone with a Seiko. In that sub 1K market, whatever category or genre your kind of watch you're going for, I think Seiko has you covered for anything. So makes total sense to me. And I've gone with the King Turtle, which is the latest update to the Seiko Turtle range. You've got a 4R36 movement in the latest one, so slight update there, but it's still based on the super reliable, super robust 4R series. It's 45x13mm, so it's a big boy, but lots of metal, makes it tough. You can bang it around, no worries. Sapphire crystal and ceramic bezel for the latest ones, so huge update there. Used to be the Hardlex Seiko's mineral crystal. And yeah, 200 meters water resistant. I think I don't really have to say much about the Turtle. It's just ingrained in watch collecting culture. It's a tough watch. It'll never fail you. Like, I don't know what you could possibly put this watch through and it wouldn't come out the other side just as good as it went in. Like, yeah.
Okay.
It's just such a great piece. And even though it's big, it wears well. Throw it on a strap, whatever you want to do. Yeah. Kicks ass.
Very good. Very good. Very good. I mean, I think, yeah, you've said that well. They're a pretty, pretty tough watch. And how much does this come in at?
So the updated ceramic bezel, sapphire crystal, King Turtles are about 700 Aussie.
And that's new?
That's new. Brand new. Okay. But you can definitely get the older versions for a couple hundred dollars off.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Good choice. Good choice. Not the winner, but good choice.
Definitely not the winner.
I love it, love it, love it. All right. Don, over to you, up to 1,000 Aussie. What's your pick?
Okay, so I chose a Canadian company, Marathon, and nice. The model I chose was the TSAR, which stands for Tritium Search and Rescue. So this is right at $1,000. On eBay, you can get it for $965. I think right now CDN and Aussie are about the same. So, but you can also buy it new on the Marathon site with a discount for right around $1,000. So this is a quartz watch. They're manufactured to U.S. military specs. It's a 41 millimeter watch that comes with an ETA high torque quartz movement, tritium gas tubes for the loom. So you don't have to worry about being in the daylight. You can be in a cave or wherever. 300 meter water resistant. It's got 316 surgical steel. It's ISO 64-25 certified, which is the condensation test, pressure test, thermal shock, etc. And of course, a sapphire crystal. So,
very good.
That's a great
I'm having a look at it now.
That's a fantastic choice.
Yeah, I reckon that bezel would be not slippery at all because those grooves are serious, serious grooves. And that crown looks amazing. But Don, it does have a date at 4:30.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
But beautiful needle hands. That's really
for
cool.
$1,000.
Yeah, you can accept it. I've not seen that. It's got the 24-hour sort of hour track as well as the 12. So very military style. That's awesome. That's a really cool watch.
Yeah, I think the bezel is actually pretty much the size of the rest of the case if you look at it on profile.
Yeah, wow. That's cool. Very good. All right. That's cool. Not too bad. Not too bad. All right. So I will, I'll kick off with mine now. So mine is, and actually before I do that, I don't think an automatic watch can win in this category. So it's going to have to be a quartz. So it's up to me and Don now. So Luminox ANU. Now, what does ANU stand for? It stands for authorized for Navy use. So we know it's going to be tough. It is 200 meters water resistance, 45 mil by 14, made of steel. It's got a bit of a black coating over it as well. Rubber strap, really tough piece, but it's got plenty of lume. It's got a date, rotating bezel, everything you need at that price range. But I think for this price range, quartz is important because it's kind of a bit of a set and forget. You know it's going to be reasonably accurate, especially in this price range. And this rubber strap that they've got on this watch, so that the Luminox ANU is awesome. And this, so they're normally about 1500 Aussie, but I've managed to find a pre-owned one with box of papers, mint condition, unworn, for $810 Australian. So I think it's a absolute steal.
That's all right. When your pre-owned timepiece runs out of battery and the automatic watch comes through, that's all right. I'll be here waiting for an apology.
Yeah, but you know, the rigorous movement of being tough, I just think, you know, the Seiko is probably going to pop a balance spring or something. You never know. But anyway, that's my opinion. So some really cool watches there. I'll be honest here. I think the Marathon takes this one.
Yeah, I think that one's pretty hard to beat.
Pretty cool. So well done, Don. You win the first one.
Excellent.
All right, let's go to 5K. So I think, Don, you were going to start us off with 5K, then I'll go, then Vinny. So what is your 5K watch that is the toughest watch on the planet?
Yeah, so at 5K, I really wanted to try to get a chronograph in here, and I really toyed with the Breitling Aerospace. But I thought the water resistance at only 100 meters, it limited it. So I went with the Zin UX EZM2B. So yeah. The Zin UX, just for those who don't know, is actually an oil-filled case. So it comes with a high torque ETA movement, and it's water resistance. The case itself is water resistance to 12,000 meters. So I don't know if there's any place on Earth that is lower than 12,000 meters. I'm pretty sure that there isn't. And the movement itself, and I'm not sure how this works, but the movement itself can take a pressure rating of 5,000 meters. So, but like with every SIN, right, it's submarine tegumented steel. They're functional between minus 20 and plus 60 degrees. And like I said, I found it hard to find, you know, to fill this price category. But anyway, there's my choice. The Sin UX EZM.
Bloody hell, Vinny. He's killing
bringing
us
the heat.
Here.
He's bringing the heat. Like, this is a freaking unbelievable. Like, Sin, big fan. I remember seeing the tegumented steel one day at a get together, and the guy's like, yeah, it's 10 years old. And I swear the thing looked like it just came out of the box. Yeah, I mean, it's just a couple meters deep there at 12,000. So, be more than happy to splash in the pool with it. It's great choice.
I know, you go down with James Cameron and keep on digging.
Exactly. It's got, and it's just so cool. It has hydro on the dial, hydro UX. Like, it's just so military, so cool.
So it's this is really interesting because that was my choice, and I kind of wish that I'd done it now. But at the same time, I actually went with the Breitling Aerospace Eva.
I called you out before.
Yeah, I know. I've massively lost this one. And I'm happy to concede. I had in my notepad, so when I do this, I save them in the top three sections of my notepad in Chrono. And honestly, right there is the Zin UX SDR EZM2B. But I just, for some reason, I wanted to go with the Breitling Aerospace. And I think you're right about the 100 meters, but at the same time, it's got the caliber 79 super quartz, which is, you know, tested to plus 15 seconds accuracy per year. It's made of titanium, so it's a really robust material, plenty of lume, but you can't, I couldn't really find how many complications this watch has. because I don't know, the internet's not big enough to list them all because it's just massive. But you know, you can do so much. It's a minute repeater. I know Benoit, Petit Seconds, who's a great contributor, friend of the show, and fifth wrist advocate, has, you know, he's just recently got one, and he actually took out a battle. So I thought I wanted to try and win a battle with the Breitling as well, but I've failed. But anyway, that was my pick. Amazing watch though. You know, it comes in at $4,700 Aussie. And I just think, you know, that for maybe I've done myself out here where it's not, maybe it's not the toughest watch in the world, but what you get for that value is just ridiculous. But anyway, I think I'm going to lose this one as well. Vinny, can you help out the Aussies here, please?
Yeah, I'll try. So I've gone with another automatic watch because, you know, quartz is great, but we're all enthusiasts at heart. And I think the ticking is just, yeah, I think it's where my heart lies. So I've gone with the Seiko Emperor Tuner, and that's SBDX014. Another one of their amazing reference numbers that's easy to follow. So this is a 52mm circular case. So no lugless watch. Big footprint, but yeah, without lugs, it's not too bad. It's 1,000 meters. Water resistant, 8L35, Grand Seiko based movement, titanium case, DLC black ceramic coated shroud. So yeah, just indestructible. And the tuner, I mean, it's just had this huge long lineage. I don't think I need to speak about the history of the tuner and how that watch came about, but there's just something about wearing this big fuck off tuner watch. Like, it's just so cool. And I think 1,000 meters and the ceramic shroud speaks for itself in terms of toughness. So it's not a watch for everyone, but I think it's one of those file it under guilty pleasure.
Yep. Look, I agree. I think, unfortunately, Vinny, I reckon Don has taken this one out as well. He's killing us.
He's absolutely killing us.
My only consolation prize is that I actually had the same watch in mine, and now I regret not picking it. But at the same time, at least we've got some variety here.
I was going to pick the Tuna as my 1K watch, you know, a different variant of it. But I didn't, because I thought that the Tuna would get picked up at some point.
Yeah, and I've got a friend who absolutely loves this thing, and he's like been on the edge to buy the Emperor Tuna for ages, and he's like, just need one, like I need to try one on just to make sure that it fits.
That's the black and gold version, isn't it?
Yeah, the black and gold. It also comes in a, you know, all black. And it comes in at the moment, it's $2,589 USD, so it's 3,600 give or take Australian dollars, so well under the 5K mark. And I think pre-owned, you can get a deal on them as well. So it's, yeah, it's just so different, and it's loud, and I think it would just be so cool.
There's a couple tunas out there that are, I don't know, in reference to, I'm going to say, some Japanese television show. I'm not sure if I'm 100. There's a red one, and there's a...
Yes, there is. That's so cool.
Yeah, the red one, the like the black stainless shroud on the red one is hot.
Yeah.
Well, Don 2, Vinny 0, Anthony 0. Okay, let's...
Northern Hemisphere, baby.
Yeah, I guess that's fine. Look, we don't mind conceding and losing to these things because we learn a lot and we get to talk about watches. So I will kick off the 10K, and then we will have Vinny next, and then Don, you can take us home just to really, you know, stick the knife in and twist. but anyway, I have gone with a watch that I've loved and admired for a very long time. It's been out for about 10 years, I reckon. And it is the JLC Master Compressor Diving Navy Seals watch. Comes in at $9,500 Aussie. Now, this watch is, it's steel. It's got a rubber strap, ceramic bezel. It's not too thick either. So it's 12.75 mil thick. Got plenty of lume. The lume is amazing on it. It's got a tried and tested caliber 899. Which is a very famous JLC movement that's had a lot of upgrades and technology over the time. But rotating diver's bezel, 300 meter water resistant, only has a 43 hour power reserve, but you're going to be wearing it all the time. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. But yeah, so I love this watch. I think it's something that I've considered buying many times over the years, and probably, hopefully, one day I'll get the pleasure to actually own it. But it's got the beautiful compressor crown and locking system as well, so you know that the water resistance is going to be really, you know, tried and tested, and it's not going to fail you. So yeah, 32 jewels. So it's a really, really sort of high end movement. Just love it. I think it's a fantastic watch, and there's so many other variants as well that you can get with alarms and GMTs and chronos and stuff, but they are a bit more expensive. But this date and time diver's watch is where it's at for me. So super, that's mine.
Super cool.
Yeah, it's a great choice.
I feel like I'm losing already, and I don't even know what you guys have got coming, but that's okay.
You know, this is a challenge, right? It's not real. We don't have to spend our actual money. It's okay. We'll be fine.
Oh, dear. Can't believe I didn't get this in. Never mind. Okay, so Vinny, take us home. Just sorry, $9,529 Aussie dollars. I'm not too sure if I said it, but yeah, it comes in under. I get $500 change to buy some straps and do some stuff, so... Vinny, what is your below 10K pick for the toughest watch on the planet?
Okay, so I hate to be boring here, but I am going to go for a watch that I own, because I don't think there is much more praise you can put to a watch other than putting your money where your mouth is and buying it. So I'm going for my Tudor Pelagos LHD. Any version of Pelagos really does the trick. I think it's been used for military purposes. It's been issued as a military watch. For certain countries, I think it's been used by saturation divers. I think John McLean's his name. He's in one of the watch groups, and he uses his Pelagos for proper saturation diving, what it's used for. And I think that's just the coolest thing ever. So it's been used in application. I don't think, it speaks for itself, but 70 hour power reserve, titanium case, bracelet, best clasp, arguably. Or one of the best. it's just such a complete watch. I've banged it around for 3 years now, and it's still plus 0.5 a second a day. Like, I couldn't break this thing if I tried, not that I want to. It's just such a beast of a watch, but 42 mil, it's like I just can't put any more praise on the watch that I own. I know I've put it through its paces myself, and it's price? One hell of a thing. It's... now, I think $6,250 Aussie dollars. So again, at the lower end of the scale. So you, with my options, you'll have a fair chunk of change left over to sneak some straps by your wife when you want to change things up.
All right, cool. Good one. Very good one. So currently I'm in front for this one, I think, with the JLC just on, I don't know, I'm just making it up. So you can win. I don't really care. all right, Don, just bring it home. What is your sub-10K toughest watch on the planet? I'm feeling a really big one coming here.
Yeah, this is, I'm glad neither of you picked this, because I did look at the JLC Master Compressor line. I went with the Seal Instrument MK1 Omnidiver. And if you want to look it up on the internet, it's selinstrument.com. So this is a company out of Arizona that was founded in 2013. And I believe the watches were designed for first responders. And it says basically on the website, if you aspire to excel in extreme environments as much as we do, you already understand why we build Seal the way we do. So this is a 48 millimeter case. It's grade 5 titanium, so it comes in at only 168 grams, 15 millimeter case thickness. And the bracelet on this, I know Vinny was just talking about the Pelagos bracelet, but there is 38 millimeters of total adjustment on this bracelet and 24 millimeters of incremental adjustment. You can get it in either quartz or an automatic. There's not too much more to say about this watch. It's just a grade 5 tie. It's probably the most engineered bracelet clasp I've ever seen. The crystal has its own suspension in it to guard against shock and expansion. The bezel tolerance is 10/1000ths of an inch, so it doesn't go backwards. The quartz loses, 3/10 of a second per day, and it's 6,000 meters water resistant.
Also, I'm just looking at the website, and it says bomb-proof.
Bomb-proof.
I think they've got some other things there, like beer openers or bottle tools or whatnot. Yeah. So, yeah. It's got, and it even comes in a Pelican case, right? So even the case it comes in, I mean.
Yeah, that's pretty.
You know, your JLC or Tudor arrives at your front door. I can run a car over my seal and still be able to pop it on the wrist.
That's awesome. And I love the opening picture of the mud and grit on the watch and the scratched sapphires. That's really cool. I love the fact that two of your watches are, from North America, really, from Canada, and then one from the US, which is cool. I think the bracelet reminds me a bit of the Blancpain 50 Fathoms Bathyscaphe bracelet, where it's really sort of chunky and it's just got a really robust sort of look about it. And the crown at 6 o'clock as well, that's pretty cool. No one wants a crown getting in the way when you're,
when your tank's climbing. Running over your watch. Yeah, I agree. Well, I think I'm going to have to hand this one to you, Don, because we tried to come into your backyard and pick tough watches, but you sent us back home packing because, clean sweep. Unbelievable.
Dear. Yeah, I agree. I think 3-0. Bad luck, Vinny. Commiserations.
That's all right.
Oh, that was awesome. Really, really good fun. And I hope that people, listening to this can go and do this stuff yourself, because it is just, I can't explain. Sometimes it's really difficult. Other times it's quite easy because you know what you're going to get yourself into. But well done, Don. Do you have a few words to say for the listeners about your win?
No, I mean, go Northern Hemisphere.
Love that you kept it patriotic. That's great.
Yeah, very humble as well. He's not dancing around screaming and shouting. But anyway,
there's lots of good choices out there, that's for sure.
Definitely. I think, and more people doing things that, require. I mean, you shouldn't play golf with certain watches, and don't do this and don't do that. And I mean, especially when you're looking at vintage, I'll probably get shot for this, but you got to be careful when you're, handling some of these vintage watches. You're not going to be wanting playing sport and stuff like that. But anyway, interesting. So I don't know if G-Shock would have actually sort of come into play with some of these categories. I know they're awesome watches, but some of the ones that we've had here today are just as good, if not better.
I think the specs on these watches too far exceed anything that any normal person would get involved in anyway.
Yeah.
No, yeah, absolutely. I was thinking of a watch, is it a Luminox that their ad is that it gets run over by a tank. And that's their advertising campaign, is that it's tough enough to be run over by a tank. So, yeah, so many choices out there. I struggled with this challenge. I thought it was really tough. But, yeah, do it. If you're listening and you think you can do a better job, let us know. Let us know where we went wrong. I'd love to hear
it. Send it in. All right, cool. Well, I think we'll start to wrap up now and have a look at people to go follow on Instagram. So, Vinny, why don't we start with you? So who is your Instagram follow for today?
Absolutely. So my account is Italian Watch Buddies, and spelt the way it sounds. Great guy, shares great photos. I think it's two of them. I think there's two guys there, and they're just so sweet, so nice. Reach out to them, have a chat, always happy to talk. And it's just, it's cool to have people anywhere in the world, and they have the same love and craziness for watches that you do. So that's Italian Watch Buddies.
Yeah, I was not following them, so I am now. Awesome. And mine today is Mr.3_Hander. So H-A-N-D-E-R, and three is the word three. Really interesting collection, obviously. Three handers are up there for him, but he's got a beautiful Oyster Perpetual 36 mil, the old black one that's been discontinued now. But yeah, it's you know, a really, really cool collection of simple watches that have a lot of function, and you know, just yeah, nice guy to have a chat with about watches as well. Also he's from Calgary up in Canada. Were you following him, Don?
Yes, already? I do follow him. Yeah, he's not too far away.
Awesome, awesome. So yeah, Rolex, some Seiko, Laurier, Neptune V3, but knows what he likes. And yeah, Mr. Three-Hander.
Awesome.
Don, what about you? Bring it home.
So mine is at Calibre, Calibre 321. So a Canadian. And I would say that, I mean, if you look at his Instagram profile, you can probably understand why I like it. We share some of the same sort of attributes in terms of, you know, rustic, rugged look. And we're not afraid to use the filters, obviously, on our pictures either. So, you know, his pictures are honestly some of the ones I look forward to every day seeing. So, and obviously he lives by a lake because there's lots of cool lake shots there. So
awesome. Yeah. Very, very similar to sort of the aesthetic that you've got as well, which is awesome. Very good. I was already following him. Vinny, what about you? Were you?
New follow. Nah, fantastic. You guys are two peas in the pod. Love the filters. Fantastic recommendation.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we can start to wrap up there. So please go follow Don Rogan if you're not already and have a look at the amazing pictures that he puts up, and along with the three people that we've recommended today as well. But also head over to Fifth Wrist, review one of your watches. We do want to see the community get involved and you know, make this thing your own, because it is all about the community. If you want to join our Slack group, which is getting bigger by the day, and the conversations are so wacky and it's all about watches. There's a little bit of off-topic stuff as well in a thread. But if you want to get involved, email me at anthony@fifthwrist.com, or get in touch with us on Instagram, Tell Your Time or Defining Time or just Fifth Wrist. And, you know, we want to get as many people involved. It's you know, we've got people from France. We've got people from the States. We've got people from Australia. And it's growing and growing all the time. So if you're into watches, which most people listening to this podcast will be, reach out, get in touch. We love welcoming new people into the community. And what we're trying to create here is a global connected community of watch lovers that can just talk all day long. And it's really cool to wake up in the morning and then you see this thread and there's like 111 comments to have to look at. But some super interesting conversation and lots of different people on different parts of their journey. So some people just starting out, and for people just starting out listening, you get to come in and ask questions from people that have been doing this for a very long time. And so, you know, if I was able to get some advice, you know, when I was sort of starting out, my collection may have been different. Maybe for better, maybe for worse, who knows? But it can help you in your decision making. So please get involved. Don, thank you. First podcast for you?
First podcast. It's been a pleasure, guys.
Well, you absolutely smashed us, and I'm really happy about that. So that's good.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Don. It's an absolute pleasure having you.
Yeah, I like losing.
My pleasure, gentlemen. I appreciate the offer.
All right. Well, everyone, have a great day. Have a nice weekend. Whatever's left of today, Sunday, but by the time this comes out, it's probably going to be a week later. But yeah, enjoy your day, Vinny. Have a good one. And thank you. Everyone else, stay on time.